Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Are you in the market for a new home, or do you plan on putting your property up for sale? You're in luck today. We have our real estate professional on the line with us to answer your questions. Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District is ready to take your home buying and selling questions. So if you do have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number once again on a call-in show, 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis, your real estate questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or a residential property? Wondering what's going on with the housing market during this pandemic? Well, we have answers for you today. Renata Lewis is here with Keller Williams Capital District. Also, Renata leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry and advice. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
So nice to have you here. Usually you are here and, you know, we're part of a panel. But it's very tough to pull these shows off, especially the call-in shows, with multiple guests. So we will go on a rotational basis. And you drew the short straw, and you're on the show today. So welcome.
Woohoo! I'm thankful. Listen, virtual technology, thankful we can do this, and excited to be here.
How's everybody's health at your house?
Everybody is well. Everybody's healthy and just trying to stay safe and kind of move forward with everything that's happening.
You know, I got to say, one of the themes, the overarching themes of all the Vox Pops we have done since this began is how it has changed doing business, regardless of whether you're a chef or you're a gardener or you run an arboretum. Things have changed. And how have things changed in the real estate business for you specifically and for the industry in general?
Yeah, so let's talk about the industry in general. Obviously, this had a huge impact when March 20th, when the pause came into effect. And I mean, I would say pretty much the first month we were at a shutdown.
Yeah.
Meaning we couldn't show houses, we couldn't meet any clients, there was no in-person contact. We went into the virtual mode. A lot of buyer consult was happening through either Zoom or Google Meets. A lot of the seller consultations were also done virtually. A lot of conversations, is this the right time to put the house on the market? Is this the right time to take it off for a few months? Buyers, I would say, for the first 3 to 4 weeks, sort of stopped shopping. I think there was a lot of unknowns. There was a lot of fear in the environment. And really, for the first month, I would say we were just having conversations with our clients, letting them know what was happening and what we were going to do in the future.
Has to be a... go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Then I was going to say, you know, a month later, we got some guidelines from the National Association of Realtors and Governor Cuomo, and we were able to just have a little bit of an insight of, okay, what can we do? What can we not do? And there were homeowners that had to sell. They had to put their houses on the market, whether it's relocation or job transfers. And believe it or not, these places and these properties were showing virtually sight unseen in most cases. So we definitely fell into a new world of selling and buying, and a lot of different contingencies came into play. So a lot of new knowledge, a lot of new conversations. And again, we had to move forward because real estate couldn't just stop.
You know, it has to be terrifying and frustrating and really problematic for those people who have to sell their homes. And even if things are getting back to normal, I can't imagine that the pace of a sale is as quick as it used to be. So if your house has to go on the market and the pandemic starts or the pause starts on March 20th, that had to be tremendously frustrating for some of your clients.
It was. So the pause affected not just real estate agents and brokers. We're talking inspectors. They were non-essential. Few inspectors, they were fighting to become essential, and there was a bunch of paperwork that they had to take care of to be essential. Town halls were closed. Titles were tough to search for. Attorneys, closings, estimates, a lot of things that, and a lot of vendors that usually typically happen in a very smooth fashion, was a challenge because they were not available, they couldn't work, they were non-essential, or it took much longer for that process to take to happen.
We're joined today by Renata Lewis. It's a real estate program on Vox Pop. If you have a real estate question, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll get to the calls coming up shortly. So you went to basically a remote way of showing homes. If I was buying a home at this time, I got to be honest, I'd be a little leery of buying a home sight unseen. Did anybody do it?
Yeah, believe it or not, we had sales. I mean, obviously the sales plummeted and it didn't happen as quickly as we normally would have. But listen, if you need to buy or sell, we made it happen. So again, there was a contingency that was added into the contract that based on us not being able to see this property, we are going to at least at some point need to visually see it before we close. So on that end, we were very careful in promoting the properties a little bit differently and more thoroughly online, meaning more pictures, actual virtual tours where we would either have the seller videotape the house for us and walk through the entire house, include pictures we normally wouldn't, such as, the HVAC systems, the basement, the AC systems, any features that we normally wouldn't highlight were highlighted because that was the only way for the buyers to see them.
Let me tell you how my anecdotal way of measuring things works. If I begin grumbling about traffic, I believe things are slowly returning to normal. This week I began grumbling about traffic. Are you seeing a return? I don't know if it'll return to normal for a long time, but are things slowly easing in that direction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would say the last 3 weeks, a lot of phone calls, buyers are ready, sellers are ready. We've definitely been able, the inventory has picked up. So anyone that was waiting, anyone that was fearing to get in the market or start shopping again in the market, we got that phone call. I feel people are ready. I feel people are tired of sitting at home. We're supposed to be entering phase two as of tomorrow. Nothing has been confirmed 100% for real estate, but I know a lot of different businesses are entering into phase two, which will mean in-person showings, in-person viewings, obviously very strict guidelines, health and safety still a major concern. So we're going to be getting new instructions and guidelines of how to proceed moving forward. But definitely we're seeing the movement, we're seeing the excitement, and right now inventory is super low. So we're hoping that the spring market will actually be our summer market, and that's what we're projecting at this point.
Renata Lewis is our guest. It's Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a quick break, Renata. I know you can't see me, signal Zach the engineer, but we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Oh, the irony is so rich. I just got an email with a question for you, Renata, and the person began by saying, I love the jazz you always play on the program. I just played some of the most unhip bumper music I've ever played, and now I got a compliment on the jazz. Well, I'm sorry about that, CT, but CT writes in with a question about real estate. Short story. Sold our 1,700 square foot house last year, made $40,000 on it, bought a mobile home trailer for $60,000, paid it off ASAP. We have no mortgage, and I just came into about $150,000 from my family business sale. We want to sell the trailer and take all our savings, sale money, trailer money, move to Florida now. Any advice on selling a trailer? It was updated by the previous owner, but it's from the 80s. There's nothing wrong with it. It's on 1 acre of its own land in Porter Corners in a quiet area. What should we expect to get? What's realistic? Best ideas to help sell? Advice on buying a home in another state? It's a lot of questions, Renata, and I'll let you have at it, and I'll go get a drink.
Okay, sounds good. Are we on now?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right, good. So it's good to hear it's on its own land. The biggest question with that type of a property is, are you leasing the land or do you own it? So if you own the land, perfect, you're halfway there. And is the mobile home on wheels or does it have a structure that is a supportive structure that is permanent? That's the next question. If it's on wheels, if it could be moved, a lot of times it can't be mortgaged.
Stop for a second. Go ahead. If it's not on wheels and it has a permanent structure, is it still a mobile home?
Yes, right?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm just thinking about the definition, so you're 100% right. So, yeah, so if, again, the mobile homes, the older mobile homes, you could basically, put it on a hitch and you could drive it around and place it on a different property. Banks will not let you mortgage that. So that would have to be a cash deal. So if that's the scenario, we have to be careful who we're marketing it to, because it's going to be a particular buyer that's going to be a cash buyer. Mm-hmm. Outside of if it is a permanent structure, meaning somebody put a mobile home on a basement slab, or they made it permanent so they can't move it, then it's a different story. There are banks that will work with buyers to purchase it and mortgage it and finance it.
Right.
So you're in good shape that way.
Well, I mean, this person did pay it off, and so I assume there was a payment.
We can already on it.
Yeah, we can probably assume it has some permanence.
Right. So if it does, great. So that's the 50% of it. And as far as price, it really depends on comparables in the local area. I would suggest calling a local realtor that knows the area well and the neighborhood well. Is there an association? What does that look like? And, price it accordingly to see what the market is doing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the value. The one thing in any property that we've seen as far as selling is condition right now is the number one factor why a buyer is purchasing a home.
Right.
So do your best to improve it as best as you can. And I'm not just saying spending money on improvements. Declutter, make it pretty, make it smell nice, put things away. You want to appeal to the most buyers when they're looking through your property.
All right. And the The final question was advice on buying a home in another state, which is a great question.
Right. So again, if you speak to a local realtor, there's a lot of times that maybe they have some connections with a realtor in another state. Or they can make a few phone calls and interview a few realtors for you to see who's a good fit. If not, then search through some of the local websites that we have online and, get some of the reviews and the testimonials that the agents publish on these websites and figure out who may definitely call them, interview them, and choose somebody that knows the area well, choose a specific area, and somebody that will be representing your best interest.
Renata Lewis is our guest. It's Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Ann is in Middleburg. Ann, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad I got online. My question actually is about a co-op in Manhattan. Would you believe it? I've had this co-op for 20... the same thing happened to me in 2008. My tenant left June 1st. And now here I am. I'm a part-time resident in Middleburg, hunkered down. And I kind of do rely on the income. I mean, I was thinking about selling it, but I just don't know what to do. Like, I don't know if anyone is going to be buying a co-op or renting a co-op in Manhattan. I know that's not your area, but I just wondered if you could share with me any insights you might have about first whether it's better right now to, I mean, I'm going to keep it empty for at least a couple of months, paint it, do some renovations. But then after that, is it going to be more a buyer's market or more a renter's market or a seller's market? I just don't know exactly what to do, given that we have this crisis, this pandemic now.
Right.
And the same thing happened to me in 2008. I had to give a month's rent for free and rent it, start the rent really low in order to get anyone at all. And now it's happening all over again. Do you have any suggestions? And also a second question would be, is it better if I am going to try to rent it or sell it, is it better to show it with no furniture or some furniture or just totally empty? Or what do you think about that too? So two-part question.
Right. So I guess my first question would be, financially, do you still owe a mortgage on it? Is it something that could potentially go into forbearance and hurt you? No. So you own the co-op?
No, I own it. I own it outright. It's just that, I do get a pension. I'm in a pretty okay financial position, but I have relied on that for income.
Right.
I mean, so I don't think, in other words, if I just kept it empty, I would have to take my Social Security out early is what that would amount. I'm 66 now, and I was going to hold off, So I do own it, though.
Right. So forgive me because we don't really sell co-ops locally. I used to sell in Long Island, and we did do a co-op market.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different. There is, you technically don't own the property. You own a share of the co-op. So so the good news is if you see any other sales or if you could go back maybe a couple months and figure out what they have sold for, co-ops tend to what one sells, another one is very close to it. Obviously, condition is going to play a factor into it as well. So if it's in good condition and you've maintained it and it looks nice, you should be able to maximize on value. Again, I don't know what the city is going to, what kind of decline or increase you will see in Manhattan based on what's been happening. I have to be very careful in what I say as far as being ethical and not blockbusting the city because people are moving out of the city, but people still love the city and they're going to remain to stay there. What I've been telling a lot of people is, we know what the market is today. We don't know what it's going to be 6 or 8 or, a month, 10 months from now. However, supply and demand, is what we're watching. So as long as supply remains low and we don't get totally hit with a ton of supply coming in, it will remain to be a seller's market, which is good for you. I would definitely, and I know a lot of real estate, even rentals and obviously sales happen through realtors. I would call somebody maybe that works with that co-op association and have that conversation with them just so they could give you better guidance. It's always good practice to, clean it, paint it, update it as best as you can, make sure all the mechanicals are working and are in top shape. I don't know what the inspection process looks like. I don't know what they add into the contract. Listen, the good news is there's not a hardship as far as financial hardship on it. If you could call somebody soon and see if you could hold out for a month or two, what's happening? Are people moving? Are people buying? What's going on in the area?
Yeah.
And really take their guidance because it's going to be much different there than it is here. And even in the local market, we're seeing pocket areas where are doing really, really great and others not as well.
Okay. So it depends sort of on the neighborhood and what's going on around in that particular neighborhood.
It will. It will, especially with the co-op. So how many are there? Do you know?
Yeah.
How many are there?
It's a small build. How many in the building you're talking about?
Yes.
It's about 20. It's a small building. It's on the Upper East Side, which is a pretty good staple. It's a studio, though. It's not a one bedroom or anything, and it's less than 400 square feet. It's very small, but I have a Murphy bed. I have track lights. Nice. I fixed it up really nicely 20 years ago and then, you know, moved out and moved in with my husband in the West Village. So, you know, it is a nice studio. And I was extremely lucky. I got a tenant and she was there 10 years and never gave me a problem. We're painting it as we speak and trying to renovate it and do whatever we can do from remotely.
All right. And we got to move it along, but thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Of course, you really can't read the tea leaves, but you got to assume if she can hang on to that, the rental market will be in New York City where it is. It sounds like money in
the bank. It has to be because, I mean, everyone's not going to move and people may not move at all. So the rental market has always been strong. And the seller's market is also maximizing the value. So if she's ready to sell now and she's going to maximize on that value, it could be a good time for her to do that as well. But again, I don't sell over there. I don't know what's happening as far as the values and what they're predicting. So definitely call a local professional from the area and they're going to be better able to guide you and, you know, and give you some options for sure.
Do you miss selling on Long Island, Renata?
I don't.
I had a feeling.
Well, I was in a $1 million market when I started, so a completely different animal. It was much, much harder. Plus, I didn't know what I know now. It's almost been 20 years.
Yep.
But it was, you know, I kind of got thrown to the wolves and said, you know, I was told kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. It was definitely interesting. There was no contracts. It's binders. Attorneys do a lot more than the realtors. So different animal. It was a great start, and it was interesting to see how things are done so differently in the same state but in a different region.
Let's go to Jackie in Saratoga. You're on with Renata Lewis.
Oh, hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. Quick question. We live in a residential neighborhood, thinking about adding an in-ground pool. Just for the foreseeable future, we're going to be limited probably with vacations. And just wondering if you have any ideas about return on investment. Say, you know, should we look to spend a percentage of what we'd expect to get for our home as a guide to kind of how much we should spend? Just what you think about in-ground pool.
So, good question. And so when we're speaking to buyers, they either want a pool or they don't want a pool. So it's almost like there's little gray area on this. So the ones that are looking for the pool, they want a pool, a saltwater pool, I believe, is a little bit more well-received than the original chlorine pool, I guess. And, you know, are you utilizing the entire yard for the pool or is there still some green space that a family could use with their children, I guess, is important to some buyers as well. I've shown some properties where the entire backyard is just the pool. And that was the big reason why they chose ultimately not to purchase it because there wasn't enough green space. Think about that end and how big you want to put it in. But ultimately, another shift that we've seen is families are enjoying their homes a little bit more and they are enjoying their backyard space a little bit more as a family and entertaining in the backyard space. So if you can incorporate, a really nice area for you to be able to entertain and enjoy as a family, to me, that also stems to the memories that you're going to be building and, you know, back to the American, you know, dream of owning a home and being able to utilize it for yourself, not necessarily for an investment. Again, a backyard space, as long as it's put together nicely, it's, you know, with a pool, when you're doing a resale, is the liner old? Is the pool pump old? What type of maintenance do we need to do? So as long as you continued updated and when it's time for resale, you get the newer mechanicals in there to make sure that the buyers don't have to worry about that. It shouldn't hurt you. Are you going to get all your money back? Not even close.
Oh.
I'd say maybe 10%.
10%. Okay.
Believe me, my husband and I did this about, I don't know, gosh, I think we have our pool now maybe 7 years, maybe a little bit longer. And, I mean, we made that decision for us. We wanted all our kids' friends to be in our backyard. But it did improve the overall value of our backyard because we did push the green space back. We dropped some trees. And overall, it's a great entertainment space. And I do believe, especially with COVID and what's happening right now, buyers are going to appreciate that space and being able to enjoy it for sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you so much. That's kind of what we were thinking, but it's always nice to get a professional opinion. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. Renata Lewis is our guest. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as far as pools, be careful also how much money you dump into a pool, because comes the pool deck, comes the fountains, comes all this extra stuff.
The jacuzzi.
So, yes. So all of that, keeping that in mind and budgeting accordingly without spending a fortune. Again, it's going to be a great space that you, the family, can utilize without over budgeting and over improving that backyard.
So really, this is one of those things that you, one of those pieces of advice that you give to many people on a lot of home improvements. If you plan to stay there, it's probably a better idea.
Yes, absolutely. You know, finishing a basement, you know, doing a pool in the backyard. You know, people, some buyers or sellers ask, hey, can we put in like a, you know, Italian marble that we're going to import from Italy? You're not going to get the money back for what it's going to cost you. But if that's what's going to make you happy in your home and it's going to bring some of that family back from wherever you're bringing it and importing it from, then do it. It's enjoyment for you and your family, and personalize it and enjoy it. And as long as you stay there long enough, it can't really hurt you in a bad, negative way.
Renata Lewis is our guest. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll jump back on the phones. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Real Estate Today. We welcome back Renata Lewis. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question here in the home stretch of the program. Let's go over to Emma in Bethel. Emma, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually just studying to get my real estate license or my salesperson license, and I was wondering if you have any recommendations on how to like find an agency near me that would be a good fit or a good sponsor for me while I start off.
Yeah, so I think that you need to make a list of what's important to you. Are you going to do it as a full-time realtor? Are you going to do it part-time? I think you need to ask them, you know, what kind of guidance are you going to provide? Is there any education or coaching that you're going to help me through? What kind of systems are you providing in me going into the brokerage? What am I paying for? Is there any monthly dues for an office? You know, you could probably Google a list of things to ask a broker just to kind of get an idea of what they're willing to do for you when you become a part, you know, a team to work with them.
Right. Yeah. Perfect.
Is this something that you want to do full time, you think?
In Sullivan County, I help people with their second homes already, property management and like running people's Airbnbs.
Right.
So I kind of just want to get more into the actual. Yeah.
So, tell them what you're already doing. Tell them that you want to incorporate that into your business. And, you know, I think a big one is really the coaching and the education end. You know, it's really important. Because everybody thinks it's kind of easy to do real estate, and it really isn't. And there's a lot and a lot to learn. And, you know, is there coaching? Is there scripts? Is, you know, how am I going to get through this entire transaction, the whole process? It's not just the paperwork. It's really hands-on. Is there somebody you can follow? Is there somebody that you can shadow? So see what kind of guidance they provide and ultimately who you feel best with. It's a great industry, and I wish you a lot of luck.
Great. Thank you so much.
Emma, thanks
a lot.
You're
welcome. Take care.
It's kind of a cutthroat industry, isn't it, Renata?
You know, it could be. I think anyone that is really running their own business and they really enjoy doing it, there's enough business for everybody out there. It's really building, to me, it's building business relationships and helping people through the whole process. And it's not just the selling and the buying process. On a regular basis, my past clients, friends, family will call me and just ask me about real estate stuff, whether it's improvements or what do you think, or, you know, I have a sister-in-law that's an appraiser, her and I always talking about different things as far as values and what improves it and what doesn't. So really, it's you got to love what you're doing and you got to stick with it, because it's not something that is going to happen and roll out in a year or two. It takes a little while to make it all happen. And once you get the hang of it and once that movement happens, it's a really nice ride, and it's fun because it's a lot of different new transactions and exciting experiences that happen on a daily basis, no matter how long you've been in the business.
Well, I mean, you make it look very, very easy, and you're a very lovely and friendly person. But tell me true, is there a collegial atmosphere among your not those in your office, but the competitors? In other words, when a cat sees another cat on a property, the hairs go up on the back of that cat's neck. When you see a competitor, are you friendly, or do you just say, okay, well, that's somebody I got to get out of the way?
No. Listen, you know, a big part of this, especially being in a smaller area like the Capital Region, collaboration is very important. The more friends you have out there, the more help and support you're going to get out there. Listen, we all learn from one another. We all know that we're going through a similar situation. And there's a good chance that anytime you have a transaction, you're going to have another broker on the other side. So being friendly, being courteous, helping each other through the transaction. You know, I've learned so much through other brokers and through other agents, and I'm so thankful that many of them do reach out and are there to support, because we all learn from one another. And the main goal is to make sure that our clients, we're getting them to that closing table and making that homeownership dream come true for them.
All right. So we've established that the hairs don't go up on the back of your neck when you see a competitor.
No. Right. Listen, you know, once in a while, maybe.
All right. There you go. Renata Lewis is
overall,
our guest.
Listen, but overall, it's a great industry. And, you know, we all know each other very well. I've been in the business for so long. I pretty much know most of the names. A lot of new agents coming into the business, which is awesome to see. And, you know, they're almost like children, a bunch of sponges that are just learning from top producers. And, you know, I do coach some of the newer agents, and I love to do that for them because it keeps me focused. It keeps me real estate 101, and they teach me through some of the questions that they throw at me, which is kind of awesome.
Renata Lewis is so you're like Yoda. Renata Lewis is our guest. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Pat in Niskayuna. Pat.
Hello.
Hi.
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 Hi,
Pat.
Hi. How are you? Listen, approximately 5 years ago, my neighbor sold her home to what she called a home flipper because they advertised no repairs were required, and they buy and pay directly to the seller. And my problem is I need information from someone who's not a home flipper, so I'm able to ask better questions regarding things I might not otherwise be aware of. And my issue is, well, as an example about those issues, is there a bank involved, or what are some of the alerts I should be aware of? And I don't have a computer. I got rid of it.
Yay!
And I want to know. I want to know how do I locate these people in a phone book? What is their proper name for their profession? It
right.
Can't be home flipper, but I can't think of anything that they would be called.
Shark.
So, right, but you're not looking for the home flipper. You want a professional to sit down with you and help guide you through the sale process and how to best prepare, correct?
Well, no, I want to flip. I don't want to fix anything here. I have to move.
Okay.
And I want to do it quickly. And that's why
I really
about a flipper.
Yep. So, I mean, I would just maybe just, well, you don't have a computer. In a phone book, just real estate, just go to the real estate section, and there should be a bunch of different ads and a bunch of different local agencies and realtors. You know, I would
did that, and I did that in about four different phone books, and some of the numbers I tried, and I didn't come across what I'm looking for. That's why I was asking, what is their proper name?
There is not really a proper name because it's basically somebody's LLC because they're running their own business. So whatever they name their business is what they're going to call themselves. I really, outside of, you know, maybe Googling, do you have a friend or family member that could sit down with you and help you and, you know, just kind of Google these pieces to see who you can find? Might be helpful. I wish I could help a little bit more. Even if I had a name, I can't really say it out loud on the radio.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We're not really,
yes.
Yeah, so we can't really say that. You know, try to see if you can get somebody from the family or a local neighbor, say, hey, can you help me? Can you Google this for me? And you should be able to find something online. However, don't be afraid to call a realtor because anytime I sit down with a seller, it's, listen, this is what we're seeing. There's options. You could sell your home as is. This is going to be the value. You could sell your home if you want to do a little work, and this is going to be the value. Or if you're going to put in $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 into your home, this is where we could price it. There's always options. So if you just want to sell it, you know, listen, the fee and the commission will be involved in all of that, whatever that may be. But at least you're going to have somebody that's handling the sale for you, and you're not going to be doing it all on your own because you don't really know what you're doing, and we wouldn't want you to be making any mistakes that could potentially hurt you financially either.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District joins us today on this real estate edition of Vox Pop. Josh in Albany. Josh.
Hi, Renata. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Josh?
Very well, thank you. So I'll keep, it's kind of a two-part question. I'll try to keep it brief. I'd love to hear your input. In 2018, my wife and I bought a duplex. We live in one unit. We rent out the other unit. The other unit pays for almost the entire mortgage. It's helped us a ton in terms of like paying off student loans and everything like that much faster than we thought we would have been able to. Well, fast forward 2 years, you know, inventory felt low then. Inventory, especially now, feels even tighter now, but our aspiration was to basically duplicate the process again this year. My wife bought it in her name last or 2 years ago. I was going to do the same this year. My question is as an owner occupant, I know two families, three families are highly, highly competitive. Is there anything that we as buyers can do? We have good credit scores and things of that nature. Anything that we can do to be more marketable to a potential seller, where we've seen in the past where sometimes sellers will get, you know, out of town money that comes in and our owner occupant type of loan isn't as competitive as maybe something a, you know, conventional buyer can. So anything that we can do to make ourselves more competitive, and then anything that you're seeing from your professional experience as far as the multifamily, not, you know, five units and bigger, but the two family to four family properties in the capital districts in terms of availability?
So availability is very low. I just sold actually two family properties that went way over asking, and I had seven offers on one and then eight offers on the other. So as far as making yourself as a solid buyer, so this is the process that we went through. We're looking at a lot of offers. You know, what kind of contingencies does the buyer have? Do they have a mortgage? How much money are they putting down? What bank are they working with? And, you know, it's essential and important that somebody's working with a local bank just because the process is a little bit easier. Obviously, I can't tell a buyer where to go get their financing. However, if you can work with local people, it eliminates the concern of who is this bank and how long are they going to take to process this loan.
25% down at minimum for another property that you're going to be calling an investment property. So 25% or more that you're going to be putting down on that loan, the earnest money deposit, don't give them 1%, give them $10,000. Give them a little bit more liquid money, you know, during the time that you're securing the contract. That money you can use towards the proceeds of the sale as long as you don't pull out for no reason. It's little risk for you to lose that money. Tenancy contingencies. There's most likely a tenant that's going to be in the building. Don't be difficult about wanting the tenants out or wanting to raise their rent right away. Keep the tenants that are in place. When their leases are due, then you can decide whether or not you want to renew them and improve them. So just really eliminating as many contingencies and making a solid offer is really, really important in the competitive world that we're living in right now when it comes to the investment properties. Some investors are saying to me, is it a good deal to buy an investment property right now because the values are maximized? Yeah, because your interest rates are so much lower. So I feel the interest rates and the higher, say you're paying $10,000 or $20,000 more for a duplex or a three family or four family, but you're getting a 1% or 2% lower interest rate, it makes sense to do it, right? You're going to get that return on investment much quicker. And the rentals are super, super maximized right now. So you're getting really great rentals, even if you don't get them the first year with tenants that may have lower rents. Keep them, let them stay until you're ready to renew, and then you have that conversation with those tenants. So I think it's the sellers for sure have a bigger advantage right now, yet the offers that we're discussing with the sellers are the ones that are solid, little contingencies, and little risk. And listen, cash always speaks volume. If you can pay cash for a duplex, you know, that definitely comes into play. However, we did have a cash offer that we turned down based on some of the contingencies that they had on there that were not strong enough compared to some of the other offers.
Renata Lewis is our guest. Only a few minutes left here. Let's go over to Saugerties. John, you're on.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the executor of an estate that has $2 million worth of commercial property. I'd like to sell it, but because I have to share the benefits of it with a nephew, that's the part of the estate setup, I'll have to pay huge capital gains tax. And actually, I will get more money if I keep it. It's $200,000 of your income right now, and capital gains tax would take away, and I'd get less income than that. Any suggestions how to sell it and not pay the big capital gains tax?
Is it all one big unit, commercial unit, or is there many of them lumped into one, into the whole estate?
It's one property with two leases on it, a car wash and a mobile on the run.
Okay. So, I mean, maybe selling them separately in different years may help you with some of the capital gains. I don't know in depth the differences between the estates and the trusts, and there is an age. If there's a specific age, it could help you with some of the capital gains. If you're going to maybe dump it into investment property within the next 60 days, that could help you. And commercial is a little bit different as well. I don't do a lot of commercial, so I'm sorry I can't be a huge help. I would definitely call, whoever is the estate lawyer, maybe give them a call and see if they can help better guide you in how to best avoid some of the capital gains and maybe invest in different properties and then sell them off separately and later in a few years, just to help protect some of and shield some of that money.
All right, Renata Lewis.
It's a hard decision.
We have 1 minute. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you have about 30 seconds to ask your question.
Go, Bruce.
In showing a house, am I allowed to do that as long as I wear a mask and the persons I'm showing it to wear masks?
Are you the homeowner?
Yes.
If you're the homeowner, I believe the guidelines say yes. Social distance.
Okay.
There are COVID disclosures that you should look up online just to protect yourself and your liability. As a homeowner, you are able to do that. Just read up about it just so you're protecting yourself and the buyer, so there's no reason for the buyer to sue you. God forbid they get sick.
Well, you make a point. Now, you said that at the beginning of the show, phase two is supposed to kick in tomorrow. I hope things loosen up for you. We're about out of time here, Renata Lewis, but a splendid job. What's your website?
Thank you. My website is renatashomes.com.
Great job. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being here. Support.
Thanks, Ray.
You betcha. Support comes from Veterinary Hospital of Laurel and Brown, Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, providing comprehensive care for dogs and cats for over 25 years. New clients welcome. drlaurelandbrown.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre. At Berkshire Money Management, providing full-service financial estate and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, berkshiremm.com for more. Once again, thanks to Renata Lewis for joining us. Thank you for listening and for the calls. Thanks to Charlene Knight, who took the calls. Our engineer is Zach Malloy. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, he got bumped last month. He's back this month, unless he gets bumped again. Gordon Fricke will answer your auto repair questions tomorrow at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for the book show.